Hello, everyone. It's time to eat, drink, and be merry with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy.
Hey, everybody. It is Wine Time with Peggy. We love it. Every first Wednesday here on Big Blend Radio's Eat, Drink, and Be Merry show, we get to have our Wine Time segment with Peggy. So every first Wednesday, you got to tune in. Peggy Fiandaca is the owner of LDV Winery. She runs it and owns it with Kurt Lawrence Dunham, her husband, who is a winemaker. And I think this is a really busy season for him, and it's about to get super busy out in the vineyard. Their vineyard is based in the Chiricahua foothills of Southeast Arizona, and the tasting room is in Scottsdale, Arizona. So if you're out there enjoying the beautiful Scottsdale region, maybe playing some golf, soaking up all the art, definitely stop by the tasting room. And you can go to their website. It's ldvwinery.com. So welcome back, Peggy. How are you?
I'm terrific. Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, good. It's always good to have you on the show and find out what's going on in the vineyard. I love that we're doing vineyard updates every month, because I think it's cool for our audience also just to know what's happening in Arizona. Like, did everything shrivel because it gets so hot in the desert? What happens? Do the grapes have shrinkage if you watch Seinfeld? Uh-oh. So, how are the grapes doing today?
The field looks fabulous. And we have a wonderful crop load, which means all of the clusters on each of the vines. We have a lot of them. And because we're at that high altitude, we're getting rain this time of year, which is interesting. Yeah, people don't realize in southeastern Arizona, we're at 5,000 foot elevation. So we get those mountain rains in the afternoon, which is kind of a little tricky because, you know, I have my little show and tell here. When you have a grape cluster like this, and you see that it's pretty wide still, it hasn't tightened up as it goes through to towards harvest. And so when it rains on these clusters, when there's open, we can have the possibility of getting what's called bunch rot and mildew. Ouch. And so what we like to do right before the clusters really close up tight is we spray this mixture. It's kind of like baking soda. It's a real natural kind of, because what we want to do is change the pH level inside the grapes. So when they close up, that pH level will be a preventative to protect it from mold or mildew or anything kind of rot.
Yeah.
So we're doing that right now in the field.
Okay, wow.
And we're also the clusters. This is, of course, tiny. The clusters are getting big.
Last month you said that you guys were like, you know, it's like going to be a really cool harvest. So this is something that you really always like sit there with crossed fingers, like let this happen. And is it? Yeah. So it's looking good.
Yeah. But right with the rain though, and because it's the mountain, we have a tendency or could get hail. In fact, there was a major hailstorm that went in and devastated some other farmers about 20 miles from us. We did not get hit. But and what happens is, you know, the hail will poke holes in the grapes. But it also pokes holes in the leaves, and then you don't have good protection for the grape clusters. So knock on wood, we didn't get the hailstorm, but it's a very nervous time right now because of that.
Drink wine. That's my solution.
Yes, exactly. You know, there's nothing we could do about it.
You can't do anything. Like, you can't run out there and cover the grapes.
No.
See, Nancy would be like a chicken hen, but how long would you last? One row.
Yeah.
I know. I mean,
13 acres is what we'd have to, that's a big blanket to put over.
Yeah, that's a huge blanket.
I mean, I mean, today we're recording this from Connecticut and we're surrounded by 60 acres and I'm going, dude, we go to the pond and back and there's no way we could just even going just up there. I'm going, there's no way, Nancy, because it's hot too, you know, but that's the thing. I think it's, This is really cool because I didn't even know that about it. So it's like you don't want your grapes to get athlete's foot, basically. You know, when you think about it, it's like, I know that doesn't sound appetizing, but we don't really think about all those little things. And it may be different for someone maybe growing in Michigan or California. Everybody's got a different thing of what they have to do according to their microclimate. So this is really cool. When do you think you get to that point of we can say, yippee-yay, we get to harvest? Well, save the grapes.
Yes, exactly. I think we're on track, if knock on wood, if everything goes well, we're on track to start harvesting our white Viognier, our white wine, end of August. And so we're getting close. We're getting very close. And so it all depends with the reds. It all depends on how the sugar levels begin to each of the varieties ripen at different times.
You're going to end up harvesting on my birthday.
When's your birthday? Telling,
August 31st. It's the last day of August. I'm going to tell you, you're going to have the perfect harvest just because I have the best luck. I have no idea. I'm just giving you good juju. You know, it's going to happen.
That is very common that we harvest on like the 30th, 31st of August. So it can be. We might be bringing in the Viognier and we'll have to send you a bottle so you can celebrate with it.
Yeah, we'll have to have wine time with Peggy.
There we go.
Well, this is interesting too when you think about it. That is Labor Day weekend sometimes. So it's like here, Labor Day weekend. Every few years it's Labor Day weekend. And for you guys, it's like, no, that we're not having the barbecues. Our clients are having barbecues, but we're out in the field, right?
Right.
So do you as all the winemakers, do you help each other in harvest time, or do you get, you know, like a crew that you work with every year? Or
we do. We have a crew that we have been working with for the last, I think, 8 years, eight harvests, wow. And we take good care of them because it's hard to find laborers, and picking grapes is not an easy task. And so they have stayed with us and they drop everything. When we have to,
that's what I'm saying. You have to go ding, ding, ding. It's time.
Correct. Exactly. We might think we're going to harvest in a day or so, but until those final sugar levels come in, we don't know. And we have a crew that'll drop everything and come and work for us. So we take good care of them, and they really understand our vineyard. They understand our approach to harvesting. And so we're very happy about that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So this is just amazing. Just like, I can't wait. I'm like next time we talk, you're going to have you could be harvesting at that time. You know what I mean? It's like, this is exciting, Peggy, and it's all going to go well because now I'm going to have these sleepless nights until my birthday.
do you taste the grapes before you harvest?
Yes, of course. So what we do is typically you can also smell. Remember last time we talked about aromas and anything?
Right.
Well, the smell of the vineyard changes, and you can smell the grapes ripening. And cool. You taste them, and then you also test them with a refractometer, the sugar level or the Brix in them. So what we'll start doing probably like with the Viognier, close maybe middle of August, we'll start taking clusters clusters of these from all different parts of the Viognier block, and then mix them all up, and then test the sugar levels to see how they're ripening at that level.
This is interesting when you've got all these different clusters and you said, okay, so the wine, like they're bigger grapes, like a bigger bunch of grapes now. Do the different varietals have the different size grape clusters?
Absolutely. Maybe we'll do that next time so I can show you our four. You know, we do only four grapes, the Viognier, Grenache, Syrah, and Petite Syrah. They look very different. And so I'll bring some samples of those clusters and show you what they look like. They're very different. And the berries, obviously a Petite Syrah is a very tiny little berry. Grenache is bigger than that. And the shape of the cluster is different.
Oh my gosh. But now I feel really special. It's all, it's like you're stealing from the babies.
I know, it is hard. Well, you know, a lot of times at this time of year, people will drop their some clusters off from the vines, like there if there's too much on the vine. And so it's called dropping fruit. We don't, this year we're not going to have to do that, but they do that to make sure that all of the energy is going into the number of clusters that they want per vine. Mm-hmm. So that's a decision every vineyard manager will make, and it changes from vineyard to vineyard. We are not dropping fruit this year.
So this is like pruning your flowers so that you get more flowers.
Right. Okay. Correct.
Right. Yeah, okay. Exactly. You get bigger flowers.
Correct. Yeah. And the other thing that some other vineyards might be doing at this time of the year, but we don't have to do that, is, at least this year we're not, is canopy management. And so that means either, like in France, because they have a hard time having their grapes ripen because they don't get enough sun. So they may cut off some of the leaves to let some sun get to the clusters, so it helps them to ripen. At our altitude, at so high in the intensity of the sun, we don't have to do that this year. We have a nice canopy over it. We do have to be careful with like the Grenache, which is a very thin skin grape, because of that intensity of the sun, it could get sunburned. So we don't want that. We want to make sure the canopy is nice, but also vineyards might be working the canopy a little bit to allow for that airflow to occur again, to reduce the amount of mold or mildew that could
occur. You know, this is really interesting because it's you're mimicking what nature does, right? Like a certain antelope eat certain parts of the trees and things the like leaves. That according to what their needs are. But they know, like if they want the best fruit later, not to eat this part, you know, and even the plant will have like a sour taste to them or something like that to say, no, don't eat me yet. I'm not ready, you know, or yes, eat me. You know, it's kind of it's exactly what Mother Nature does. But it's interesting how you're talking, because it is like gardening. We did I remember we did a raised bed garden when we were in Tucson in our backyard, and our raised bed was out of this cloth kind of thing. And we were doing a product test and it kind of worked. And then what happened, because we had such an enclosed garden, we didn't have the ventilation. Right. And so here came it, like, versus what we used to have was like two different backyards. We used to not do like walls, and all of a sudden we got aphids, we got all these different things coming and getting us. And I think that was really
well, and it was hot,
so everything sweated walls. It got sweaty, and our plants didn't do as well, and yet we were growing. You should see, we were a test garden for roses and all daylilies, and I think we even did grapes in Joshua Tree area. And everybody would go by our garden and go, what the heck is going on? You can't grow in the desert. We're like, you can. You know, thank you, cow manure. Because we had to amend the soil. We did so much with our soil, but it was more of an open setting in our fencing. We had more of a breezeway coming in. And then when we moved, it was all wall. And that's just, you know how it is. Most desert homes, I'm going to just say, like, get rid of the walls. It's not good for your plants. And so we had a gardening expert on. I'm going, I don't get it. Like, the soil's right. We're doing the water. And he's like, you don't have ventilation. Right. Period.
Good, you know? And
we were testing the degrees. Next to the wall was 15, and this is a huge jump, 15 degrees hotter than like 4 feet out from the wall. That's hot. Yeah.
And it's the same with desert. You know,
like the roses would burn on the side that wasn't in the sun. It would burn on the side next to the wall, whether or not it was touching the wall. So we learned, like, you need to move the plants way out walls. I mean, it's, I get the point of them, but when you're in a hot place like we were, don't work so well.
And we did drive by our old house, and some of the roses are still growing.
Oh, then, wonderful.
Yeah, you know, you do go sneak back to your own house. You know, yes, you can't help it. But this is, but yeah, you and Kurt, aren't you both from Detroit? Am I right?
No.
Where is it?
I'm from Illinois. And
Illinois.
Kurt's kind of a mutt. He's kind of from all over the place.
Well, then what are you going to call us? We're real mutts. we're like, put us in the kennel.
Yeah, he kind of associates with either Ohio or Texas. He spent the most time there. Sense.
Well, yeah. I was asking, because I don't know why I had Detroit stuck in there in my head, but Illinois is close enough.
Yeah.
We're going to be going through there. We're going through Illinois. We just came through Ohio and the prairie lands. And that's what's kind of, I was just going with you guys understanding I know you've lived in Arizona for a while, but getting to understand the Arizona climate, because where you are, you also have those grasslands. And right. I wonder how that helps the grapevines or if it doesn't, but it's got to be good little mulchy for their feet. I don't know.
You know, when we chose our location, it was covered with mesquite trees.
Oh, yeah. Bushes. Oh, and you know what? They overplanted mesquite, the ranchers, way back in the day out there.
However, mesquites are legumes. And they put incredible nutrients into the soil.
Yeah.
So when you see a field that's filled with them, it's a good place to plant.
Water. Because of the peat, they have their little beans and people grind them up and make flour
and
mesquite muffins and
wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God, your area is like really still one of I know I every Jack time we talk beanstalk. I get excited. I'm kind of homesick again. It is a place that people will never understand until you get there about the sky islands and the biodiversity. You can have grasslands and then forest and then snow and then no snow and four seasons too. I mean, you get fall colors out there depending on where you go.
You're going to have to come during harvest for your birthday one year and we won't put you out in the field to work, but we'll put you on the crush pad. So when the grapes come in and then we have to, destem all of the, make sure there's no leaves or anything on the clusters. You can help with that. And it's a lot of fun. So you can work, we call them our crush pad junkies, the volunteers that work with us on the crush pad during harvest.
Can you put
are we allowed to drink wine later?
Can absolutely. We take good care of you. Lots of wine, great food, and good times.
What about a grape stomp where you get in there with the grapes and smash them up with your feet?
Yeah, a lot of people still do that. We don't. Mm-hmm. We don't do that. I'll buy some table grapes if you want to do that. But
yeah, it feels good on your feet. We've done it. You know, just at winery things, and it feels really good on your feet. But
I don't think anybody seriously drinks the wine.
No. But we'll do it next year. We'll do it next
there
year.
You
we'll
go.
Put it. We'll set it up for next year. It'll be fun.
Perfect.
Because I think it's just such a fascinating thing for people to really understand, like, okay, now's the time. And it's, you know, some crops are like that, but this is like seriously one of those crops. Hay is like that. When you're going to bale the hay, you can't mess with the date on hay. You know, it's like, boom, you must do it now.
Yeah.
So, and we're all sitting there going, and then can the wine just come out miraculously?
I don't think so.
And it just flow. Well, let's get to, summertime is definitely here. August is one of those months where everybody's like, really, do we have to go back to work? And you're going, we're about to really work.
Yeah.
It's one of those tricky months, but you know, it gets a little bit hotter and definitely in the desert. So grilling is a big deal, being outside. I know we want to talk about that, and we'll get to your word of the week, which you've already dropped quite a few, by the way. But your word is tannins, and so that's an exciting word. But let's talk, or do you want to talk? Let's do the tannins, because sometimes that ends up in our conversation on food, right? So tannins,
tannins are an important part of the wine grape. They're naturally occurring in the skins of the grape, you know, that's where, and typically bigger reds, so like a Cabernet, a Petite Syrah, will have more tannins in it because usually they're a smaller grape. So there's a more skin to pulp ratio on the grape. And that's where the tannins come from is the skins. And how you feel the tannins in your mouth from the wine is it kind of gives you an astringent feel in the back. I always say it like hits you back in your palate, like back here. And if it's well balanced or managed the tannins during the winemaking process, it shouldn't make you pucker, you know. But I know a lot of people have had a red wine and they go, whoa, or you get the shock or this kind of puckering effect. The tannins aren't as well managed maybe in the winemaking process. White grapes very seldom have any of those tannins. But what's important is that tannins are critical for in the wine, particularly to cut through fatty foods. And so that's why steak houses always have Cabernet Sauvignon or Petit Sirah on their menus, because with a prime rib or a ribeye steak that has a high fat content as part of it, you need a high tannic wine to cut through it. So for example, I have our signature Petit Sirah here, which is a wonderful Petit Sirah.
Yes, it is.
And it's 100% Petit Sirah. And this is a perfect wine to go with a mesquite grilled prime rib or ribeye steak. And it just cuts through any of the fattiness and really melds the flavors really wonderful. And same thing with like a Cabernet. But the other key thing about tannins and why they're so important, it's a preservative for the wine. So that's why a Petit Sirah or a Cabernet Sauvignon can be aged a long time because of that tannin structure. Yeah.
Okay. I always thought it was like the sulfides thing.
Well, sulfides also is a preservative in the wines, but tannins are naturally occurring in the wine, and that can help preserve it also. And so I don't know if you've ever had like an old Cabernet, or, and I'm talking like 30 years old or so, but you might get sediment in the bottle. A lot of that's tannins that in the bottle, or can be tannins in the bottle. So it's important to help cleanse the palate when you're eating fattier foods, or chocolate is a great, because they have tannins also, cocoa beans. And so pairing that with a big red that's tannic is also very important.
That's interesting. So when you're barbecuing, you know, you've got like your steak, maybe you're doing burgers, what, you know, so you're going to do the reds. But now if you're going lighter meats, are you going to do like the white wines, or where are we going on that part?
Yeah. So I want to kind of start by saying, let's think about grilling, barbecue, how I define barbecue, and smoking. Those are three things that you might do. Okay. Outside in your backyard, right? I define grilling as something that you would cook over a high heat over a shorter period of time, right? So you're going to throw your steak or pork chop or chicken on the grill, and you're going to cook it higher heat, shorter period of time. Barbecue are those things that you're going to cook over a longer period of time, so an extended period at a lower temperature. So things like your pork shoulder, your brisket, the tougher kinds of meats that you need to break down the tissues in those meats, you're going to barbecue over a longer period of time. And then you have smoking. So you want to impart that smokiness into your meat, vegetables, whatever it might be. But it's very indirect cooking in a smoker that can, or a grill that can keep that smoke in it. So you're basically, and you can cold smoke like with a salmon, or you can heat smoke, but really the smoke is cooking the meat, and it's very indirect.
Delicious.
It's really kind of all chemistry.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, that's what winemaking is too, you know? So it's so the smoking thing is interesting, because you do, like, the wine would be, you have to really go by the smoke, right? But like,
Well, for their parents? You know, it's interesting with smoking. One of the first things you have to think about is what kind of wood do you want to smoke it on?
Mesquite.
Right, which I love. We smoke with mesquite. But if you did like cherry, it's going to add a little bit of a sweetness to the smoke and then impart that flavor into the meat. So depending on the flavor of the wood you choose will also impact the flavor of the meat that you use. And then, of course, smoking, because you're using maybe a tougher cut of meat, you're going to want to dry rub that or put some kind of dry rub on it. And we always suggest, you know, 8 to 12 hours in the refrigerator, dry rub it before you then put it into the smoker in indirect heat. And we usually smoke like at 200 degrees. And it's critical to maintain that temperature over the long period of 12 to 14 hours that you might smoke something. But all of that kind of imparts different flavor profiles. The spice rub you put on, or the wood that you're smoking it in, might dictate a little bit of how you pair the smoked meat.
So that's interesting, because I never, you know, we always talk about grilling barbecue, but we always forget like smoking is its own animal. You know, it really is. Now, does it change what you're grilling, barbecuing, smoking? Because I know people that even bake, you know, they do like pies and stuff on a grill and a cast iron thingy. You know, in South Africa, we used to do, well, it's kind of Dutch oven cooking here. We call it poikiekos. So it's a Dutch oven, a big pot, and you put whatever you want in it. Some people would put it underground overnight. Like, it's a big tradition. And so it depends on what you're putting in there, I suppose. But there's something about the iron, to me, that changes the flavor. There's just something.
That would have, what you're putting it in, it will definitely impart a different flavor. Plus, it cooks differently in a pot versus right on, indirectly on a grill.
It's like oak and stainless steel.
I know iron, like iron skillets stay hot a lot longer. So, I mean, and I know how my dad taught me. He was a butcher, and he taught me with iron skillets. Once you've got it to the temperature you want, you put a cover on it, and then you turn the oven or the fire off, and you leave it.
Interesting.
If you keep cooking it, you're going to burn, and then you're going to have to scrape the skillet or soak it, and both those things are really bad for iron skillets. Yep. So, and he called it seasoning, and you never really put, it's going to sound bad, but you wiped the skillet out and re-seasoned it, but you never put it in like water. You sure don't put it in a dishwasher.
Yeah.
And you don't scrub it.
Absolutely. That is so, you just get the particles off from it. Like if you have anything that's stuck, and that's it. And if you have to re-oil it a little bit, wipe down some oil. Oh gosh, yeah, I have several. I think it's my grandmother's iron skillet, and then I have four different sizes, and I have a really big one for big crowds. But those are my prized possessions. Are those iron?
Yeah, so you downwash Peggy's cast iron.
You season it with oil, like if it's looking dry, you're like, go in there and just re-season,
and you can. You can put a little oil on it, put it in the oven a little bit to seal it, and that's
What do you mean by re-seasoning? Both of you are talking about this. Are you salt and peppering it, or what?
Spices.
I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Ketchup. I'm sorry, but whatever comes to cast iron stuff, Nancy's like, step aside.
You're seasoning the surface, so it continues to operate effectively and doesn't stick, you know, over time.
Yeah.
So have you always cooked, Peggy?
You know, I started very young cooking. I love to cook. And in fact, we had our wine country supper club last evening and cooked Italian for almost 20 guests. But yes, we love to cook.
That's cool. And you're still doing the what's it with the flowers? I saw that on Facebook. This snipping. Yeah. Is it the snip and sip?
Yep.
I've got to watch how I say that.
Snip and sip.
I just put me in the sip zone, but that's cool because you got the flowers and the wine, and that's really cool.
Yeah, we do. We try to keep busy. You know, the other thing, since we were talking about smoking, you know, everyone, depending on where you come from in the country, you have your own idea of what good barbecue is, right? So, you know, if you're from Kansas City, you think your barbecue is the best barbecue in the country. Mm-hmm. Or if you're in Texas.
Oh, boy. Are you starting a war, Peggy, right now?
Right? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's kind of fun to understand what kind of barbecue you like. Mm-hmm. And then think about the wine pairing. So, you know, Kansas City barbecue usually has a tangy kind of tomatoey sauce that they like to put on their meats after they, you know, they baste it with it. You know, for that kind of a barbecue, I would pair it with a Cabernet Franc or maybe a Zinfandel. And it doesn't matter if it's a beef based or if it's a pork ribs kind of base. Mm-hmm. It's the sauce, that tangy tomato based sauce, that would dictate the type of wine you would put that. Now, if you're from, you know, the Carolinas, if you're from North Carolina versus South Carolina, they have two different kinds of barbecue that they consider. So North Carolina has a sweet barbecue sauce that they're really known for. And again, depending on, it doesn't matter what kind of meat, if it's pork or beef, you would want to put that sweet barbecue sauce with a petit sirah or maybe a tanat. If you, that might be a nice one, but South Carolina is more mustard based in their barbecue sauce. So you might put it with a Sauvignon Blanc, a white wine, or a Sangiovese.
Actually, that sounds kind of good.
You're going with the sweeter tomato, you're going to go more with, you know, the Zins, and then the Sangiovese, those kind of things. You're getting the spice with the spice then.
Yeah, and like with the tomato base, because it's a little bit of sweetness and fruity, a little bit, maybe fruit complements. So the Cabernet Franc and the Zinfandel are fruit-forward wines, I think would pair nicely with a tomato base. And then you got in Texas, their barbecue, it's just dry rub. You never put barbecue sauce on Texas barbecue, or you'll be shot, I think, in Texas.
So, don't mess with Texas.
Mess with Texas barbecue at all. Wow. Yeah, that's so they just dry rub their pork or beef, whatever they have, brisket, ribs. And so Syrah or a Cabernet Sauvignon would be wonderful with a Texas barbecue.
Hmm. So, Becca, the other day I was watching this video of ducks and geese, like a whole lot of them, roaming through vineyards, and they were calling them the military protection for a vineyard, and they had hundreds of them. And it was like, wow, you know, I get that they eat bugs and snails, especially.
Okay.
But don't they pick at the grapes? Do you know? Like,
I don't know. I mean, they're if our grapes are quite a ways off the ground. So unless they're sitting on one of the fruiting wires, I don't know if they could get to the grapes.
Ah, okay.
So they might be, and I don't know if ducks, do they eat rodents? I don't think so.
No, they're just, it's really they're eating insects is what I think they're doing. I mean, they're not, you know, geese don't, I don't think they eat.
Are they grilling them? Either.
No, but they really are. I mean, the geese are pretty tall.
Well, I don't think we would not have them here. One, because we don't have enough standing water for them, because they would still need to have that standing water. But that's interesting. I mean,
a lot of vineyards in South Africa.
Did you? Okay. A lot of vineyards use obviously those baby doll goats and in the vineyard, but that's primarily for keeping the grasses down and weed control. But yeah.
Huh. No, and I've heard South Africa doing a lot of it, but I want to go back to the barbecue and grilling and because like you've got Memphis, I was just thinking how Tennessee as a state is different too with barbecue. Correct. And Arizona, so Arizona's got to have a little bit more. Arizona gets interesting because in New Mexico, don't they start roasting chilies and stuff like that on the barbecue? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And so it gets a little bit spicier, I think, mm-hmm. in the Southwest. And then I don't think the spices with the chilies and things like that come into play, I think, with barbecue. But I think we lean a little bit more towards Texas style than having our own
unique that's what I was thinking. Yeah, I was thinking more. Hmm. So I'm just trying to and you've got such good Mexican food. You can do such good stuff on the grill. I'm sorry, I'm kind of...
You're hungry.
I'm homesick.
I just started getting like that, you know?
Right. So right now, I think we're coming into hatch chili season.
Yes.
Oh, out of New Mexico. And so in Arizona, I mean, people make drives to New Mexico to get hatch chilies by the bag load so they can come back and roast them up and have wonderful chilies year round.
Well, it's interesting as we cross the country and we stay in different homes, the selection of spices does change.
Yes.
It's very interesting.
When you're in Maryland or Delaware, you're getting Old Bay seasoning in every home.
Yeah. And, but I mean, and the only really constant that I've seen besides salt and pepper is basil seems to be universal.
And oregano.
But then I'm looking for, like, where is my chili powder?
Yeah.
And no.
No, not on the East Coast.
And cumin, that's a whole other deal too. I'm always looking for, to me, chili has to have cumin in it.
Right.
And it's like, and oregano, those things have to go together. But that's it. I mean, it's really about, are you going, because chili is kind of like, we've got to do that too in the fall. We should do a chili thing on this because it's, again, people are doing sweet versus the spicy, right? It's kind of that similar thing.
Yeah, and there's just so many different kinds of chilies down by us where the vineyard is. We have a gentleman down there that is world renowned for creating different chilies at different, I think it's Schofield.
The different
measure, the hotness of the chili. I can't recall exactly what that measurement is. And he creates them to your specification, depending on how hot you want your chilies. He grows in there. And so that's kind of exciting.
Ooh, that's neat. So Arizona, when you think about everyone, because I know that, you know, people go to the tasting room and they're going out by their pool, and I'm leading up to our music today, rock garden, swimming pools, and barbecues by Michael and Spider. It's from the album Perfume of Creosote, Desert Exotica. It's very cool.
Awesome.
But, you know, that is what's happening in Arizona. Scottsdale, everyone, Phoenix. The whole state, this is outdoors, evening time, and people are swimming, and they're, you know, that rock gardens are happening. Mm-hmm. But what are you going to say that people are barbecuing or grilling? What do you think's going on food-wise and the best pairing for that?
Well, there's just so many wonderful things that you can do, from very light dishes like a salmon on a cedar plank that is on the grill. And so you get some of that flavors from the cedar, soaked cedar plank, and as well as whatever wood that you're grilling on or smoking on. Or, a lot of people do chicken on the grill, or kebabs. I love to do grilled chicken breasts on the grill. And what I do is stuff fresh basil under the skin of the chicken breast, and then lightly season with salt and pepper and rub it with a little grapeseed oil and put that on the grill. Wonderful, very light, wonderful dish. Or, vegetables. Cooking vegetables on the grill is incredible because there's so many wonderful vegetables coming in. skewer up some zucchini and red onion Ooh. And tomatoes and whatever else you might get from the farmer's market. I think the tip for grilling vegetables is because you want the flavor on them. So a lot of times what I'll do is I'll choose the vegetables, cut them for the skewer, but I toss them in all my seasonings. So I'll do olive oil, salt, pepper, maybe some oregano, some other spices. I'll toss all of the cut up vegetables and then skewer them and put them on the grill that way. Because if you do it after the fact, it doesn't really absorb into the vegetable, right? Putting the salt, pepper, or whatever on the top of it. You want it really to absorb into those vegetables and to bring out the full.
You're making me hungry right now because I love, well, and there's a caramelization that happens. If there's a perfection Correct. To it where you know, for me, it's like, if I'm going to play grilling, we're in trouble. So I'm not allowed,
but true.
You can overcook them so fast and they go mushy, or you can burn them super quick. But when people know how to grill, even fruit, there's that caramelization that is, it's so good.
Yeah. So pineapple. Leading in pineapple. I mean, that's the recipe for the month is spicy grilled pineapple and kind of put it with them. You can make homemade vanilla bean ice cream and the combination of them both. Oh my goodness. You know, I think get the fresh pineapple, obviously, and slice it. And what you want to do is lightly grill your grates on your barbecue grill so that the pineapple doesn't stick to it. Mm-hmm. And just grill on both sides for, you know, about 3 minutes a side is really all you need for the pineapple, and then pull it off and make a pineapple sundae with your homemade ice cream, and then put whatever toasted coconut or different topping on top of that. Just incredible.
Peggy, stop it.
Toasted pecans.
You're killing me.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, that goes nearby because pecans are from Southern Arizona too.
Yum. Yeah.
You're not allowed to say pecans, Nancy. It's pecans.
Pecans.
Okay.
Pecans.
Otherwise, you're saying pecans. It's pecan. But people are pretty correct about your pecans.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, this is, you're dangerous.
You know, the other fruit that is just incredible to grill is peaches. You know, what I like to do with peaches is cut the peach in half, take out the pit, and then just brush the cut side with some butter and sprinkle it with a little bit of sugar, and then grill them and the cut side down for about 3 minutes. So you get that nice caramelization on the top of the grill. And then if you want to make those peaches maybe a little bit of savory after you've grilled it, crumble in some gorgonzola blue cheese in the center when you turn them over and let that melt all over. It goes great in your salad or just
now. Grenache, what about a Grenache pairing with that?
Of course. Perfect. Beautiful with a Grenache. Or
see, I'm learning.
You are. You did good. Yeah.
And I'm hungry and I'm thirsty and this is I think we're going to change the name of the show, Danger Zone.
The next time we should all be having a glass of wine when we do this.
Yeah, this is bad because you're talking and I keep sipping my water going, well, this is just not cutting it.
Here's our new radio show. We'll be eating and drinking.
Yeah, no, really. Can we just have a barbecue? But okay, so what about corn? Is corn season over?
No, not for us. Our corn season really starts, at least in southeastern Arizona, August, you know, it'll start picking up in August. So we do our farm wine country barbecue the first Saturday in August. And I always do a fresh corn salad as part of that. So I go to our farmer who grows the most incredible corn and get a huge bushel of fresh corn. A lot of times I don't cook it. You just take it off the cob. Just like that. And it's sweet corn. And you don't even have to cook it at all. And I turn it into this incredible basil corn salad that it's I can't, if I did the barbecue without having that salad, I think I'd have a revolt. So.
Oh, wow. So this is a big deal. This, yeah. So you do a bar. So is this for your members only, like your wine club members when you do these events?
Nope. It's open to the public. And so they can get on our website and register. We limit though, the participation. It had gotten too big in our opinion. And we always like to have more intimate kind of, so we limit it to 60 people. And
that's a good number.
That's a good number.
Perfect party size. Yeah.
That's a good party.
Yep. It's a good party. So we do a barbecue. We do a really in-depth tour of the vineyard with Kurt. And of course it's before harvest. So you really get to see the beautiful grapes, and we teach you about all the grape varieties. And then we go into the winery, and if everyone is really nice, Kurt will get the siphon out or the thief and pull some samples out of the barrels so people can taste wine in production, so they can see what it might taste like a year or 2 years from now. So that's a lot of fun.
Okay, that's it. You know how you do show and tell with the grapes. I want show and tell with all the little gadgety things, because every time we go to a winemaker's, you know, cave, there's the cellars and then there's the cave. It looks like a scientist's office with all kinds of things. And I'm always like, what are they doing? What are they experimenting on? But it would be fun.
Yes, I should do that. Yeah, that would be fun.
That'd be cool.
Bring all the tools of the trade. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I love it. Well, Peggy, always fun with you. You've made us hungry though, and I'm a little thirsty, but that's
your
job.
Wine.
And so thanks for sharing all your great tips and advice. And everyone, ldvwinery.com is the website. Wine Time with Peggy, Danger Zone. it's Danger Zone, is every first Wednesday, because we love our Wine Wednesdays, of course, but don't limit it just to Wednesdays for drinking wine.
Wednesdays are great for it. It helps you.
Every day is a wine day, as far as I'm concerned. So check us out there, and also keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. And now we're going to close with our Rock Garden Swimming Pools and Barbecue song from the Michael and Spider album called Perfume of Creosote Desert Exotica Part 1, which was recorded out of Tucson. So here it is. Thank you, Peggy.
Thank you.
Peggy.
You bet.